Chelsea Atwood, and it's time for a new episode of the Steven Universe Podcast. And today, we're lucky enough to have creator Rebecca Sugar and co-executive producers Kat Morris and Joe Johnston here to talk with us about Steven Universe crossovers and collaborations. We're going to talk about the uncle-grandpa crossover, working with Takafumi Hori on the Mindful Education episode, and what it was like developing Save the Light, the video game from Grumpy Face Studios. So let me welcome Rebecca, Kat, and Joe. How are you guys doing?
Good, thanks.
Hi, good.
Hello.
Awesome. So the first thing I wanted to talk about today is just Steven Universe's place within Cartoon Network. It's obviously, you know, pretty unique, but how does it feel to be part of, like, Cartoon Network's sort of legacy of all these different shows?
It's pretty unreal. As someone who grew up watching Cartoon Network shows, I think I can't quite get my head around the idea that this could be that for a younger generation, like the way that it, for me, growing up on Dexter's Lab and Courage and Powerpuff Girls, I try to think about it. I try to understand it. I see it in the eyes of the children who come and meet me, that it has that weight that those had for me. What do you guys think?
It's weird, yeah. I even thinking about it in that context of Dexter and Powerpuff and Samurai Jack and all of those.
Oh, man.
One from the late 90s.
I can't imagine having the same weight as those.
Yeah, we'll never have the same weight.
we didn't start
it's the still, wave. Those are still magic, you know? Those are still on the TV. We don't really know how they made those.
I guess we sort of have a slightly different system.
But. Yeah. on Steven, we have the whole inside access now, so it's...
Right.
It's not as magical as something that just comes, you know.
Right. That's the sausage we ate.
Yeah.
This is the sausage we make.
So you talk about Powerpuff, Dexter. What other shows were there that were big for you?
Oh, my gosh.
Just on Cartoon Network?
Well, mm-hmm. Samurai Jack was revelatory. Mm-hmm. And I loved Dexter. So seeing Samurai Jack and just seeing that someone could get that ambitious and do something so mm-hmm. artful and cinematic was exciting. Gendy's Clone Wars cartoons were a huge mm-hmm. deal for me. That was one of the first things I asked as I worked with him on Hotel Transylvania. I was like, who did the scene where they pull the screws out of one droid and they kill another droid with the screws with the force?
I think this just came up last week.
I know, I was bringing it up because, it was like a mix of Gendy and Brian Andrews boarding this sequence. I loved that sequence. There's this like ship with this huge stomping thing.
Yeah, that's the Mace Windu episode.
Making this pulse through it of just like slamming into the ground. It's just so cool. It had this rhythm.
And then there's the Coke commercial at the end.
I don't know if I remember.
There's like the little boy who's like watching the whole thing.
Right.
And then Mace Windu like leaps up onto the hill after it explodes. And then the boy hands him his canteen.
Right. Oh my gosh.
And Mace Windu.
I really love
it. I used to have a hat like that in college that I wore. And everyone.
Because of Clone Wars?
No. I had no idea.
It was because I watched Clone Wars.
Yeah, and then Henry, Joe, you look
That's
just
awesome.
Like this guy.
I remember that was my babysitting secret weapon, is I had a DVD of Gendy's Clone Wars cartoons, and whenever I had to go babysit, I would bring it, and we would just watch them, and I was the cool. I was the cool babysitter.
That would work on me now.
I know.
Wait, didn't you talk to Gendy, like, when you were getting the show together, like, the pitch together?
Yes, he gave me a lot of advice, and he also directed the pilot. Mm-hmm. So this would be a very different thing without his input. And I still, he's here now, so I see him. He did an intro for the art book. I'm very lucky to have his
explain directed.
He did the exposure sheets, which means that how everything moves was literally written by hand on a gigantic chart, you know, the actions between each thing that people say, the way that Amethyst's whip, you know, gets pulled out of her gem and then snaps to the ground, exactly down to the 24th of a second timing of that was dictated literally by Gendy on giant charts of paper.
Yeah,
I've actually been told in a media training workshop to never talk about exposure sheets because they're so dry. Well, so this person was like, you know, don't talk about the technical stuff.
That's what we're all about here.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I just wanted to clarify. Just you said Gendy directed. I didn't want it to make it sound like he directed the episode in like a directorial.
Right. He was the animation director of
and like the film
pilot.
Director, understanding of directing.
Yes. Rebecca boarded it and I wrote it and everything.
Yeah. Yes. I also, that's true. I had something to do with it too.
So where did you guys like start from? Joe, you didn't start at Cartoon Network, right?
Mm-mm.
Where were you?
Another studio.
Mm-hmm.
A studio. Okay. That not...
and
they who
and...
will not be named. I was working for Disney TV before Steven Universe.
And then Kat, you were on regular show.
I was on regular show. Yes.
Nice. And Rebecca, you were on Adventure Time.
I was on Adventure Time. That was my first job in animation.
Yeah. So like you were mostly like storyboard artist, right? Was that?
Rebecca started as a revisionist.
Oh, yes, yeah. I started as a revisionist.
Did you always want to like come make your own show? Like,
yeah. Well, that was my dream. I did not think it was an attainable dream. I, especially as a kid from the East Coast, that was, I didn't know I would end up moving out to California. I thought that I would be doing a job like revisions and then I would be doing independent comics on the side, and that would be how I was sort of telling the stories that I wanted to tell. I didn't think that when I started writing and boarding for Adventure Time that I'd be able to express myself in such a direct and personal way, like the way I did through my independent comics, through an animated television show that went around the world. That didn't seem like a possibility to me until I ended up working on that show, and that was something that Penn really wanted me to do. Once I realized that that was possible, everything changed. But I'd always dreamed of having a show.
I also always dreamed that Rebecca would have a show.
Oh, gosh.
What? Yeah, I remember I would read Rebecca's comics online before we met in college. And one day I was at the college studio and I saw that her ID was in the folder to say that she had like checked out a light disc. And I was like, oh, Rebecca Sugar is here. And I went to go meet her. And I remember she was doing this match action where like a character was like showing watches and then getting punched. Do you remember that?
It was for the goon. Yeah, I was doing a, oh my gosh.
I was just like, hi, you're Rebecca Sugar. And you were like, yeah.
That is, I still have a really hard time believing it. I used to see, I would sit in on figure drawing classes and I used to see Kat across the room. Kat was upperclassman. So Senpai. We didn't have classes together yet. And I remember I would see you across the room. And I was like, man, she looks really cool. And this is where I saw your drawings. But then I remember like walking around sort of inconspicuously once just to see your drawings and being like, oh man. Yeah. I'm like, oh no, her drawings are really good.
Very flattered.
This person is.
I have a hard time believing that.
The total package. Oh my gosh.
That's crazy.
And then we ended up, when I moved out to work on Adventure Time, I moved in with Kat because Kat was already out here working on regular show and we would hang out and watch anime together. Yeah. It was basically
you say,
a
like,
fantasy.
You got the heaviest you ever got because we were like eating ice cream and watching anime.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't usually have a lot of like sweet stuff, but when we were living together,
I really bring a person down.
You got me into it. Oh man, you were really sick at the time.
I was
so worried.
I just had a horrible cough that wouldn't go away, and I wouldn't go to the doctor because we didn't have a car.
Right.
And so I would just wake up every morning on the air mattress I was sleeping on. He would make me tea.
Yeah.
One time we walked really far to go to an art store.
That's right.
I almost died.
It's really scary because we were both coming from New York where everything was walkable.
And so, yeah, we looked at a map and we're like, yeah, this is like so reasonable.
Yeah, it's like 2 miles away. And, but it's like these like underpasses where like no human has ever
there's like no
walked on
walk.
Foot.
It's
yeah,
hot like hot out there too. Like
you guys
it was night. That was
to, at the Empire Center.
Oh my God.
we looked at a map. We're like, that's not far away.
We did.
You have to cross train
and then
tracks.
We didn't buy anything because we wanted to get ink in a sketchbook, and I think it wasn't good.
I don't think
like,
they had the right kind. Yes, after all that. Also, I think it was freaking out.
Yeah.
Just because it got dark. And whatever. What this got weird.
It's
how do we get to
it's
this?
It's really cool that that's the crew that you put together, like after all of these things, you know, like
back from the dead crew.
Yeah.
I remember when we got Joe your storyboard test was like in an envelope. It was done. I forget.
Yeah, it was on paper.
It was on paper.
Yeah.
And early on, we were sort of like, how are we going to find people who like are on the wavelength of what we're trying to do? And that was just like, oh my gosh, like here it is.
Yeah, we had a yes, no, and a maybe person. Folder. Uh-huh. And Joe went like a heck yes folder.
Yes, yeah.
The whole don't let him get away.
Another category. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's really exciting.
Yeah. I didn't really know you guys at all.
Yeah, you before. Were in a totally different track.
Yeah.
Other school, other coast.
We hadn't met before my first day.
Wow, is that true?
That's right. Crazy.
I met Jeff, mm-hmm. but yeah, but I hadn't met you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
I hadn't even seen the pilot animated.
Really?
Until that day. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a fun first day. That was a really fun first day because I'd only seen the animatic and then I saw the pilot and then you showed me the sketchbook with all the fusions in it.
Oh.
And then you told me about plans and it was like, wow, okay, this was a good decision. I'm really glad
I
took this job.
Wow. Oh my gosh. What was that, six years ago?
Almost 6 years ago, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I want to talk to you guys about the Save the Light game and what it was like making that with Grumpy Face Studios. It's out on the Nintendo Switch now, which I'm super excited about. So let's get into the video game collaboration coming up. All right, I'm still here with Kat, Joe, and Rebecca. So let's talk about games for a second. Nintendo games in particular have a big influence on the series. We've talked about this before, right?
Yes, absolutely.
What's Nintendo?
You love it. Yeah, right.
Wait, no, he's a Sega man, isn't he?
No. Oh, I never had any of them growing up, so.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I loved Sonic, but.
You came to them as an adult?
No. I mean, my friends had them. I never had my own system growing
interesting.
Up.
Interesting.
Yeah, so
oh
I was
gosh.
I would go play my friend's Sega or my friend's N64.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It was all cool. Like, it was all cool. There wasn't one.
Yeah, that's how I was with Sonic was like, I mean, we were a Nintendo household, so Sonic was the thing I played, you know, at the house of a cool friend yeah. where I would be like, oh, this is important and special, but I didn't have it in my particular home.
Yeah, I was also a Nintendo household.
Yeah.
Same.
Firmly.
So Save the Light, the Steven Universe game, how involved were you guys in that?
We were very involved in that game. Yeah, we really tried to tie it into canon, link it up to episodes. Hess and I appears in the show in a very abstract way.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to carry that through. And little things, I was really involved even down to the sort of wording of a lot of the dialogue. And they would pitch us things, like they pitched us Square Dot. So some things I think tonally are a little different than things that we would do, but I still like them. I mean, that's how we are on the show. Like, it's very collaborative. So mm-hmm. there's definitely a vibe, a Grumpy Face vibe that I love, that stuff that only they mm-hmm. pitch, but we like to shop on and kind of bring it into our wheelhouse a little bit. I think we talked about Square Dot saying pebble instead of clod. I like the thought that all, you know, Paradots are maybe inclined to be
insulting,
a little insulting, but yeah, but it's not always the same one. There's like there are multiple very rude things within that you can say about someone within
usually size or form.
Gem culture. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, we were very, very involved. I was involved with casting for Hessenite and gameplay. We got to test a lot of the earlier versions. Joe, you drew all those fusions.
Yeah.
And yeah, because we had to translate them into, so Ian had sort of established this style.
Yeah.
This mm-hmm. like chibi style.
Yeah, I was just following him.
Lineless style. And then Joe kind of took that on to all the fusions. And we talked about all their attacks. Fusion was the thing we were the most excited about because we really wanted to be able, that wasn't in the phone game, the original
mm-hmm.
game.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted to explore fusions and relationships, and there's like a relationship meter so that the more mm-hmm. that you help someone, the more capable you are of combining with them. And then one of the thing I love the most about the game, and this is sort of true of the older one too, but I love that when you're playing as Steven and he's healing and he's defense, if you don't heal yourself as Steven and then Steven dies, it becomes really hard to win. I think it's like a really beautiful metaphor that, you know, it's really important that Steven heals the characters, and you really need him because you need to be able to heal everyone. But if you don't heal yourself and you lose that, then everybody suffers. Everybody suffers. And I really think that's true. You've got to take care of yourself so you can take care of other people.
Yeah. I loved playing those demos that they brought us. That was really cool.
Seeing Beach City in 3D.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Yeah. I think since the beginning of the show, we've been putting out feelers just like, please, someone make a game out of our show. Like ever since, what was it? That mini golf game.
Oh,
The Golf Quest. Yeah.
Golf Quest mini.
There was a fan working on a version of that for a while. They were going to make.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know what happened to it.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting.
But yeah.
Wherever you are, keep working on it.
we were excited.
We're all steeped in that RPG language, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like Save the Light. The team. Oh, getting Greg on the team. That was like the first thing we talked about was like, we need Greg. Greg's a bard.
Yeah. I remember talking a lot about what everyone's class would be. Like, yes, Greg is the bard. I think I was just coming off of Bravely Second. I was like, I love classes. Let's talk classes.
That was so exciting.
That's right. I wrote up that sheet of all everyone's like combo attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to come up with. It was like one with Greg driving the van into people. I don't know if that's in the game. But
yes, I believe that's in the game. Yeah, I will confess I haven't beaten it yet. Someday when I get to come up for air, I'm going to play our game. I've gotten a little ways into it, but the multiple endings was something I really wanted. I had wanted that so early on when we did the first one. I had this pitch. We couldn't do it for the phone game.
We should have done it. This is my favorite.
So
do it.
Okay. So the first game, it's like they find this prism, and it's like whatever you do, Garnet is like, don't take the prism into the light, or it'll activate it, right? And what I really want to do is have an option at the top where you could either walk it over into the light and then the game starts because the prism comes to life and attacks everything. Or the other option would be you just hand it to Garnet because she tells you to. And I was like, we should have the option where if you just do what Garnet says and you hand it to her, you beat the game 100%. Over, credits roll, you win, you 100% win. You just do what she says, and then nothing goes wrong, and you win the game completely. And then, but then if you actually activate the prism, it would be really, really difficult to 100% the game, because you'd have to get absolutely everything right. Anyway, that didn't work out, because it was just the mechanics of the phone, but I was really excited for the second one, that we could do multiple endings, that we could have a little more, like, more options, sort of in that vein.
Sorry, we were talking about Square Dot. Yeah. I was, big Square Dot fan. Was there anything else that Grumpy Face did that was like off the wall that surprised you or anything like that?
I mean, it was always a back and forth. I think, Square Dot was a surprise as an initial pitch. But then the fun part was kind of talking about the way that Square Dot would have a contentious relationship with our Paradot, because our Paradot has arced and Square Dot has not. And the idea that our Paradot is like feels enlightened and this Square Dot is like not, and what their argument would be. I remember doing a lot of shopping on their back and forth, how the tone of it being like they each think that the other is terrible in this very specific way.
Yeah.
Which is fun. And we hadn't gotten to have our Paradot in that mode in a long time. It was like a slow journey trying to get her out of thinking like that, so obviously it would be for this person too. But that was fun.
Yeah.
Like the pebble thing.
Yeah, that one's, I really like that too. It just came out for the Switch too.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's going to come out in tandem with it has come out in tandem with the OKKO game, which is also absolutely fantastic. I really recommend it.
Play that. I really
it's so good. Barter, yeah. It's really, really good. It's really, really fun. It's very, very different too. You're fighting, you're brawling. It's not an RPG in the same way, but it's so. And sometimes with fighting games, like I'll get like a little tired or checked out of them. But not that. That one is so fun because the animations are so cool. Like when you're fighting Ernesto and he's like a big circle and you just like punch him and it just puts a big dent in his body. Like it's so cartoony and it's so satisfying. And then when you win, you get to punch his pinata and all this stuff comes out and you collect all these. Oh, it's just really, really fun to play. So hey, I recommend it a lot. Get them both
on Switch.
Yeah.
So something else I wanted to ask about is there's a lot of other Steven games and spinoffs, and I hear that you are a fan of the Steven Universe Monopoly game. Is that true?
Well, I have a story about it. I mean, yes, I think that was a really cool process, but there's something interesting about the Monopoly game that no one will ever remember. which is that we premiered the beta kindergarten in the Monopoly game. That was the first time it appeared. We'd been working on it in the show, but I was really excited because we were sort of building all the areas, you know, all the comparable utilities. And
did the Monopoly game come out before that episode?
It did, and people did notice it.
Wow. I had no idea.
Wow.
That's great.
They were like, what is this? Oh my gosh, that's where it premiered.
See, if we didn't have this airing schedule, we wouldn't have these wonderful little nuggets for fans to find.
We might have been boarding it even at the time that it was that old that it just, the episode wasn't done, but the design for the beta kindergarten was done.
But the color got in there.
Right, that right. Well, yeah, we had a color BG. I can't even remember. I can't remember the timing, but I do know it hadn't aired yet. And that was in the Monopoly game first. Yeah, there were some powers. This is also true of the Attack the Light. Pearl shooting like laser beams out of her spear and Amethyst spin dash. Those things appeared in the game. We'd already drawn them. Lamar came up with those moves for, oh my gosh.
Watermelon Steven.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they had not aired yet. They premiered, those moves premiered in the game, but we knew that they could do that. So that's actually where they happened first. Yeah, there's something wonderful about the way that time washes over everything and flattens it out. But I love the fact that we were able to put these things out in the world as these like strange, mysterious Easter eggs, pre-Easter eggs, before the actual episodes even aired.
That's awesome. And something else that I really want to talk to you about is working with Takafumi Hori on the episode Mindful Education. So let's hear about how that collaboration came together and what it took to actually get that episode made. All right, I'm still here with Kat, Joe, and Rebecca. So let's talk about like crossovers and stuff. We Say Uncle was a big one, of course. That was back in season 2. What was it like coming up with that idea and like merging those two very different shows?
Oh, well, I mean, I was really excited because Uncle Grandpa is someone who can, you know, cross dimensions in order to help children with their problems. And we had a child who had plenty of problems. And so it just felt like a very natural fit.
Ultimate understatement.
Yeah, it felt like a natural fit.
It was your idea, right?
It was my idea. I wanted to do it. I remember talking to Pete about it at an airport. That's where I first pitched it to him. I think we must have been going to a con or something. Or it might have been when we were flying.
Like to Atlanta or something?
Korea?
It could have been. It might have been when we were going to Korea. I'm not sure if that was at the same time. I just remember being at an airport being like, hey, do you want to do this? And he was down. We were sibling shows. We came out at the same time. Yeah. I knew Pete and, you know, I wanted Steven to really be about a lot of people and characters who are wildly different from one another, coexisting and caring about each other. And to me, it seemed like a way to express that, to bring another character in that, you know, is coming from a completely different angle and half and a completely different show. And the gems are, you know, not ready to handle such a different kind of cartoon. And Steven is like, hey, this is what I stand for. Like, maybe think about how being so mean to this person is a little bit of a problem. Yeah. And they have to confront that. I didn't like that Steven was being used to trash on other cartoons. That was really alarming to me. And so I wanted to make sure it was clear that we stood for very, very different styles and voices all being able to find a way to coexist, which isn't to say that it won't be messy or confusing or maybe a little bit strange and challenging, but that's a challenge worth taking on. That's how I felt. That's why I wanted to do it.
Joe, you wrote and boarded this episode.
Yes.
What are your specific thoughts on it?
It was a lot of fun. I remember we went and pitched it with the Uncle Grandpa crew. I think, I'm not sure how many of the crew actually knew what was our show, but also that this was happening.
That's true.
Because we were like over in their conference room and like Pete came in, then a bunch of other people came in, like their arms crossed, like, wait, what? What is this? That was
a surprise party.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember it was like the first pass we did on that. that was it. Like, that episode went so smoothly.
Yeah.
We just went straight through that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You did some really abstract jokes.
Yes.
The likes of which we would not normally get to do.
No. Wait, were you the one who did Uncle Grandpa coming out of the clamshell as Rose?
Oh my God.
Yes.
Well.
Yes. That was me. Their heads popping off and circling the world.
Their heads popping off. Yeah. The tripping over a letter. That was really.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Why?
Why?
Over a letter, why?
That's such a joke. That's such
and
a
then,
joke.
And then the plot hole. And
right.
Plot yeah. Hole. It was. Yeah. It was a very. We had to get very quickly up to speed on. We had to get to Uncle Grandpa speed
right.
very quickly, me and Jeff. But it, yeah, it was a lot of fun to do these like one-off gags of Lars and Sadie's yeah. ship and
yeah.
all of that. Oh, and Canon. Oh, yeah. yeah messing right. with Canon.
Oh, people ask Steven's gem being polished twice a year. I haven't gotten to ask you this yet. Is that a reference to a diamond really on purpose?
Polishes twice. No, I think we came up with that in the room.
Did, well, maybe. I wonder who. Because apparently
that was a
that's
Jeff line.
Specifically a diamond. That
I don't remember.
Needs that? Or that's been brought up as like a huge call forward.
We did that in the room.
Man. All right. Well, I'm going
that
to have
That
might have
been
to,
Matt.
Ah, I'll that might have been ask, Matt. I'll yeah. have to ask Matt. Because obviously we knew that, but I don't remember who wrote that specific line. And I also didn't know that about diamonds. So I'm not going to take credit for that call forward.
Is that a diamond thing? Is that like a. You polish them twice a year?
Apparently, something like that. I've seen people try and find all the call forwards, and that's been one. And
was
I keep
that a
meaning
call
to
forward?
I keep meaning to ask you if you did that on purpose.
Oh,
to Stephen Bean Diamond.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I don't think we. I think it was just.
It's just coincidence.
Just wash,
luck.
Yeah, wash yeah. your gem. I don't know. That wasn't
wash
that
gem.
Wasn't
I don't
meant
know.
As like, oh, this is something really yeah. nice. That, it's, we're gonna
see. I don't mind though, because that said, you know, this is something we always knew about Steven. So yeah. it's a happy accident, yeah. but it's not like
yeah,
we would have done it if we had known that.
Forward.
We definitely would have. I gotta ask Matt now.
So I also want to talk about some other like guest collaborators and stuff. Takafumi Hori on Mindful Education. How did that whole thing come about?
Wow. Okay.
Wait, did he have a relationship with Jeff going? Like a,
yes.
like a pen pal sort of situation?
Yeah. They were talking on Twitter, and I think were several people chatting with him. We all knew he was a fan because he would post fan art,
yeah,
which
we
was
saw
just
his
awesome.
Art. But Jeff was the one talking with him.
Yeah,
he was
Jeff
the one
was
who sort of
him.
Facilitated it at the beginning.
Yes, and then I was going to take a trip to Japan.
That's right. When everyone took trips to Japan.
When everyone took trips to Japan.
It's a crew. Someone's always in Japan.
Yeah. So the show, we've all been pretty much, well, I guess not all of us. I've been full-time working on the show since, I think, 2011. Like, nonstop. The only time I've had was 3 weeks in 2015. And that's when I went to Japan and met with Trigger. It was completely amazing. Jeff was already chatting with them. I think he set it up because yeah. he'd been talking to them. So we met up. There were several of us. Efren was there. Jeff was there. Ian was there. We all went. And I thought we were just going to get to walk around the studio or just see it or just meet him or something. I thought it would be small. But then when I actually got there, you know, we had a tour of the place and then a bunch of us just went into a conference room and sat down and we had a meeting, which I wasn't expecting to happen. I guess I had sort of hoped that it would happen because one of the things I wanted to do was I knew this episode was coming up and that it might be an opportunity to work with a guest animator. I really wanted to ask Hori-san if he would be interested. But then we ended up being in this meeting room with everybody. Yoyo Nishinari was there across the table. I mean, it was like people who I am such a huge fan of, and we were just like asking each other about our pipelines, you know, how do you get this done. They're doing their backgrounds on paper. I didn't know that. I saw them. They're beautiful, like watercolors. Our whole system is very different, especially post-production. This is where I'm getting into the I was taught media training, don't talk about the technical stuff, but It was amazing. And then, you know, our whole storyboarding process is different. Their storyboards are a lot looser, and then they have animators in-house. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about that, how that works. I mean, it was just incredible. And then at the end, I started asking if it would be possible to work on an episode together. That was the beginning. Mindful, it must have been written at that point, because or at least it was
the outline.
Yeah. Was it, at the very least, it was a twinkle.
Yeah, because when it was being boarded, we already had
to go. Yeah, so it must have been, we must have had
it. Or we were just setting it.
Yeah, it must have, the outline must have existed, because I remember before we had the outline, I had thought that that episode would be 11 minutes of Stephen staring at the camera, teaching children how to mindfully meditate. Then we could, I thought that that would be, I was like, can we just do this? And Ben and Matt are like,
that's just a PSA.
Maybe we need something to like, yeah, engage kids. Which I actually, that's one of my favorite stories about writing an episode, because I love what we ultimately figured out, which was that in order to make this engaging, we had to create a scenario where you wanted to see the characters benefit from mindfulness, which I really like. It kind of reframed how I think about storytelling in general, because I really want to work a lot of these ideas in that I think could be helpful or I haven't seen before. But the idea that by taking characters you love and seeing this technique benefit them, that that's a way to craft a story around a concept that could be a helpful concept. I mean, I just really loved that idea. So we had that. We had that. Then we went to Japan. And it was just incredible and so inspiring. Everything is really so different. Pipeline wise.
The exciting pipeline. And then Hori ended up requesting some scenes, right? Like he was just going to get a music video and he's like, I want to do some of this action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He took on some of the action sequences. Yeah. Oh, so glad.
It's so cool.
The nice thing about doing this song was that it's locked to time before we are in animatic, because we had the boards, but we weren't in animatic, so the timing didn't exist. But to do the action scenes, we basically had to rough in, basically. I remember writing an email about how long I thought each action scene would approximately take. So it would be like, we sent him the boards, and I'm like, this will be 8.5 seconds. I mean, this is what animation directors do, but I had a stopwatch, and I was just like staring at the boards. Click, okay, it's going to take that long. He's staring at the boards. Click, okay, it's going to take that long. And so I sent an email that was like, this is how long these action scenes are going to be. And then he animated based
That's
on that.
So cool.
Yeah. And so, and just to be clear of like what Hori-san has done on that episode, and he's done key animation, which is basically he takes the boards that, in this case, Jeff and Colin did, and he cleans them up in sort of his style and the show style. But then he also goes in and marks how the drawings are to be in-betweened so that an in-betweener can come through and then finish out the animation. It's like one step of polish above where we get our boards to.
Yeah, more keys, and he did direction. He did sheets.
Yeah.
Let's spend the whole time talking about sheets.
I feel like we're talking about this, but do we also have to explain what a key frame is?
What a key
and
frame
what
is.
In between frames are?
Okay, so a key frame is.
Get ready, children. Pull up a chair.
So
let us tell you the tale.
You know, say a character's going to punch. You have like the fist reared back before the punch, and you can have like the fist extended after the punch. That's a key. Extended, that's a key. I'm doing this gesture. You can't see it because this is a podcast. The in-betweens would be, so fist pulled back is a keyframe. Fist extended, that's a keyframe. The in-betweens are the action. They're the drawings that happen in between those two keys. And so what, through timing, through animation direction, you would say this in-between is going to be this close to the first drawing or this close to the final drawing, and there'll be this many of them. That's the direction part. The interesting thing about something like a punch is that you have to have very few in-betweens in order to make it look fast. What is your face? He's still laughing.
Good, I like this.
That's something I think, this is a little animation school style. I think a lot of people early on, like when I was at animation college, you think something fast must mean more drawings. More drawings, more fast. Not true. Less drawings, more fast. If you take drawings out, then the emphasis is on like the final pose and the first pose, but it's very, you move very quickly from one to the other because there's like maybe, I would say for something like that, you'd want like two in-betweens and you'd want the first one to be pretty close to where you start because you'll feel like an acceleration is happening if it's like the fist is here and then maybe the fist is like maybe half a fist's length forward and then maybe the third one would be like a smear drawing where it's whipping through space really fast and maybe blurring a little bit and then boom, it's in its final position. If you really want to do something fun, you could have it go a little past its final position and then pull back a little bit into its final position. That'll give you the sense that it went so fast that it overshoots. So actually there was more to the story of working with Takumi Hori because he did animation direction. He did exposure sheets for his sequences, but none of the dialogue, because dialogue is in English.
Yeah.
And so I flew out to Korea, to Sunmin, and we basically sat down with sheets that had all the dialogue on it and sheets that had all of the action on it, which one was from Hori-san and one was from slightly off track, our track readers. Man, I'm really going 100% into this.
Here we go.
Yes. And we had a sort of long sit down about how we wanted to preserve some of the limited animation, some of the timing, even though the mouths would be moving, like keep this drawing still, like you don't have to add extra action in order to match how much is going on with the mouths, like try and preserve as much as you can of the action. And you can see it in the final, you can tell that it's moving differently and beautifully, but
just a shout out to Sunmin. They were the real heroes in this one. They took Hori's drawings and in between them, and then also these two versions of the sheets and putting the mouth movements over his drawings.
Yes.
And it all came back so beautiful.
It came back fantastic. Yeah. They're coloring incredible.
It, compositing it.
Yeah. Inking everything by hand. Everything is inked on paper with pens, with brush pens. Like, they did beautiful inks on all of his keys. I mean, they're incredible.
I just have one Hori story, and then we can stop talking about the technicals of animation.
Well, I want to throw down the gauntlet. Anybody who listened to that explanation of animation, if you would like to animate a punch and put it online, I would love.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Was it? I hope it was comprehensive.
It was clear to me, but we went to school.
We went to 4 years of school to know how to do. Yeah, that.
And what's your Hori story?
My Hori story is, that sounded like horror story, but that's not what I'm saying. There are two really awesome action shots where Stevani is kicking butt against the Hollow Pearls, and I in-betweened both of them just for funsies.
That's right. Yourself.
And the real fun part was to look at the Japanese exposure sheets and sort of learn how their sheets work with the American sheets, because they're different.
I remember you calling
the
sheets.
The beautiful part is, like, I could, and well, this comes with like animation training, but like you could understand what was happening with his timing charts and the sheets. I understood it enough. It was like this universal animation language that crossed borders, and it was a lot of fun.
All right. That's all the time we have, but thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me.
No problem. Thank you.
The Steven Universe podcast is produced by Stacey Parra, Charles Abadje, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, The Crooniverse, and Turner Studios in Atlanta. You can listen to the Steven Universe podcast free on Spotify, Amazon and Google smart speakers, and, of course, you can also subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a rating and review while you're there. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and I'll see you next time.